Thanks. Well, I'll be known to a few of you here, not to everyone. So I thought I'd probably better give you a little intro to begin with. So I've been sort of rattling around the church for about, I don't know, 6-7 months now. And gradually getting to know people. I'm actually originally a genuine Wainuiomartian Martian. I was born here, grew up here, lived here till 1980, and then moved into Wellington, came back here 2014. But when I moved back here, I was very much involved with a Christian community in Wellington, particularly around Lyell Bay, and that took a lot of my time. And so I was kind of like the commuting Christian, you know, I was back and forth. And earlier this year, I just thought, I really need to connect into the Christian community in Wainui. And so came along here, and can I just say what a delight. People are lovely. This has been the most welcoming church that I have ever been to, and I've been involved in a number of churches over the years. So I want to say thank you to all of the people here who have said hello, who have welcomed me, who have forgiven me for getting names 2 or 3 times. And of course, there was the challenge, you know, so I come here and what do? You know, I mean, there's different people, things people can do in churches. You know, I could do maybe meet and greet, but that would be like, oh, hiya thing. Yeah, no, it wasn't going to work. And singing, no, I'm not going to go there. So in the end, we come down to this. So you got me for this morning.
Awesome.
Now, this particular message I want to bring this morning, I've done this message in different churches over a number of years, but it's really coming out of the stuff that God has worked into my own life. And for me, that's perhaps one of the things in the heart of teaching, is that as the Lord teaches us and leads us through a walk and unpacks the scriptures for us and then says, okay, how do you live that out? Then we get to share the things that come out of that journey. Now, one of the things I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to go into a bit of detail in the scriptures, because this is stuff that needs to be really firmly scripturally anchored. And I want to say that for some of you, this may be familiar. For some of you, it might be, well, this is new. What is this stuff? Particularly if you are a new Christian or not a Christian, if you're not familiar with Christian teaching, you might think some of this might be a bit on the weird side. Angels, demons, whoa, what are we talking about? So I want to kind of unpack that a little bit and demystify it a wee bit. First of all, we're going to go to Daniel chapter 10, if people want to flick your Bibles open there, but most of the words will be up here, and quite a few of the words, and I'll read out from here. I just want to say before we go into the detail of this, that sometimes people think of things around spiritual beings. Do angels and demons exist? Think of this as perhaps imaginary stuff. There are other people who have written detailed books on it. There have been books written about hierarchies in the demonic realm, and I'd have to say I find them quite doubtful, because a lot of what is written is not there in the scriptures. And so that's why I want to narrow down what I talk about to the things that are in the scriptures. And to give you that picture of what does the spiritual battle really look like. One of the things I want to say straight off is that for the most part, the spiritual battle is not force on force. Okay, it's really important to understand it is not, for the most part, force on force. Sometimes, yes, there is the power in the name of Jesus to cast a thing out. But most of the spiritual battle happens in our hearts.
Yes.
And, you know, for all of the activities that go on in the spiritual realm, the spiritual battle against us, God could go flick to all of that and it's gone in a moment. But God chooses not to do that, because there's a battle of righteousness that we need to fight, and that battle is in us before it's anywhere else. So that's where we're going to, okay? So what are we dealing with? So this is from verse 4 of in Daniel chapter 10, is it? Yep. So on the 24th day of the first month, I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris. I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen, with a fine belt of gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like topaz. Up on there it says chrysotile, which is a word for topaz or emeralds, those kind of jewels. So imagine the body made of that. Weird. His face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. Any thoughts as to who this being might be? Okay, so we have Michael, we have Jesus, there's two options. Let's see. We'll go from there. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. Those who were with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left, my face turned deathly pale, and I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking, and as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, Daniel, you who are highly esteemed, consider carefully the words I'm about to speak to you, and stand up, for I have been sent to you. And when he said that, I stood up trembling. Then he continued, do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. So now you've got a question here. You imagine the being that's just been described, and he says some other being called the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted him for 21 days. What is going on here? Then Michael, enter Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained with the king of Persia. Now I've come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come. And thanks for advancing the slides, because I keep forgetting to, and I've got them on here, but it's separate from that. So I just want to say thank you. That was helpful. Okay. So there are two people this isn't. Okay. This isn't actually Jesus. And it's not Michael, because Michael comes in second. So the being that we're talking about here would be understood to be an angel. And just to mention for people who often claim to see angels, most of the time, one of two things happens with angels. Either they come in an unrecognized form, or if they're recognized, people are terrified. And, you know, I know someone in Wellington who frequently talks about it, and there's angels around the place at the moment, and listening, and I'm thinking, you're not scared. So I'm beginning to doubt what you're saying. Maybe he's right. But angels generally in the scriptures are kind of terrifying. But there's something else that could resist the angel. So now we're going to go to Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. So we have this being referred to as the dragon. Who is the dragon? The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him. So this is the general understanding that we have around angels and demons, is that Michael, who was mentioned in Daniel, is the same Michael here. So this is an angel over angels, an archangel. Satan also has angels, which we refer to as demons. So they are the same kind of being, and they have perhaps territories. Okay, so we talk about a territorial spirit, a spirit over an area, hence the king of Persia. Now, some people have suggested that this was actually Satan himself because of the location with Babylon and the that origin of darkness. But that's just a surmise. Maybe, maybe not. What we do know is that there are these beings. So now we're going to move on a little bit to the New Testament. And we get some very similar references here. So one of the things that happens is with the scriptures, it can be helpful to work across the scriptures. Sorry, I keep on taking my glasses on and off. It's because I need them to read this and then you will go blurry. I hope you don't feel blurry. But there we go. So Jesus, in John 14, verse 30, he says, "I will not speak with you much longer, for the prince of this world is coming." Who's the prince of this world? "He has no hold on me." So Jesus is referring to a being called a prince. And you can see that these angelic beings get referred to as princes. "He has no hold on me." Satan has no hold on Jesus. Another interesting New Testament reference is in Ephesians 2:2. And that says, "As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient." And pay attention to that expression, "at work in." Okay, this is how Satan does his business for the most part. He works through people. And he will work through us given half a chance. The greatest wounds generally inflicted on people are by the people closest to them when it comes to the wounds of the heart. Okay, if you're wounded by somebody that you'd never met before and they say some nasty thing to you, you think, "What was that? This is weird." But when the closest to you wound you with their words or the way they treat you, that goes deep. And if that can be brought about through spiritual influence, yep, that's the demonic game. Okay. So then we have a counter to this in Ephesians 6. And for anyone who hasn't read through this part of Ephesians 6, it's so important when it talks about what's referred to as the armor of God. So it says, "Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes." So the devil has schemes. And in a way, I guess I'd express this, it's a little bit like, yeah, what's a scheme? Wah, yes, my evil plan has worked. There's a scheme, okay? Plotting, finding ways to do things, finding ways to influence. This is schemes. "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood." That's also so important, because we get tempted to fight each other, to fight people in the world. But it says, it's not flesh and blood we fight against. And think of the context of this under Rome. Do we fight Rome? Do we fight organizations in the world? But it says our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So this is the spiritual war. It's the stuff that's going on around us that we can't see, but we need to be able to stand against. Oops, just lost a thing there. Oh, have I lost a slide? Okay, I'll better come back to that in a minute. So one of the things I'll just note, further down I touch on the details of that spiritual armour, but I just want to point out that the spiritual armour is just a picture. It's actually a picture taken from Roman armour. And sometimes I hear people say, "I put on my spiritual armour every morning." What is the spiritual armor? Actually, I will just flick forward to that because I think it's going to be better to do that. So I'll just use the clicking thing here. Is that going to work? Oh, clicking thing not working. Power on. Ah, that'll be the one. Thank you. Got there. Okay, so it says, "Put on the full armor of God, the belt of truth, the breastplate of righteousness in place, feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Pray in the Spirit on all occasions. So my question to the person who puts their armor on every morning, I kind of understand what people are doing, but it's kind of like, when do you take it off? So let's see. It's bedtime. I'm going to dispose of truth, and I'm not going to be in righteousness until tomorrow morning. Okay, so, yeah, this is the thing, is that this is not, don't mix the picture up for the thing it's a picture of, okay? Always the truth in our lives. Righteousness, that means acting in righteousness towards one another. It is justice, it is mercy. This is the armor, not an imaginary action, okay? Okay, so, going back a little bit. So we're going to go back to, for my help up there, War 101. We're going to have a little look at war. Oops. No, that's not the war. See, I've created chaos now, haven't I? Oh, we'll get there. So while we find that one, here we go. Okay, so often when people think of war, they think of armies against armies, force on force. And that's certainly part of war. So if you think of what's happening in Israel and Gaza at the moment, the United States have just sent a whole pile of warships over there. That's a show of force. That's force on force. But that's not the only way that war happens, because another big war that's happening around that at the moment is the war in the news media. And the war for people's minds. Oh, it was a bit loud. War for people. What the hell happened? War for people's minds. Okay? So there's more going on. So there's these two categories. You've got the direct frontal attack, where you can see the enemy, you know the enemy, and the many enemies saying, I'm going to beat you. But then there's the other kind, subversion, corruption, persuasion. This is the behind the scenes stuff. That's where you don't want to be seen. In the church, spiritual battle looks like, on the frontal attacks, persecution. Okay? If you're in a country where you're going to be thrown in jail or perhaps beheaded for being a Christian, well, there's no secrets about that one. That's out there. Witchcraft also, which is a real thing. The desire to use spiritual forces to control and affect other people's lives. That's basically what it is. It's power obtained from the spiritual realm, but not in righteousness. So that's, sometimes that's done in secret, but persecution isn't. Christians conflicting with one another, splits factions, the distractions of the church. Okay, there's one spiritual tactic that has enabled Antichrist. Talk about the Antichrist spirit, but it's actually really a tactic. And it's anything but Jesus. Distract you into your program, but forget about Jesus. Okay, so it's as subtle as that. And the final one that I've listed here is the church disgracing or discrediting itself in the eyes of the world. Back in Revelation, Satan is called the accuser. The accuser is another major, major tactic, is accusation. So Satan will have us accused as much as possible. One of the things that you'll notice in what's going on through the Western world at the moment, particularly, you know, what does some of the issues that we see floating around have to do with one another? What does environmentalism have to do with LGBT issues, have to do with Israel and Gaza? Money for some people, yeah. But all the way through, there's two characteristics that run through all of this. One is that these things are characteristically anti-Christian in the end, that Christians will be placed in a position where they will be accused. So that's one tactic. Division is another one. I've never seen Western nations so divided, so ripped apart. And those divisions take the form of you people, accuse. So do you see the work of the enemy here? We must not take part in that. So that's the danger to us. We will be tempted to get involved and accuse. Okay, now I, for example, walked through the protest at Parliament, and there were people there who were demonstrating in a way that I thought was right. They were saying, this is what has happened to us, this is wrong, this is injustice. And there were others who were going, accuse. So it was a very mixed thing, a mixture of righteousness and unrighteousness. You get that all the way through politics. So we've got to be very careful when we align, that we don't align with unrighteousness, because we may align with a spiritual tactic. But just for a little bit of light relief here for a moment, it was something I found that was quite funny. I'd known about this from years ago, and I found it on the internet, much to my, well, not so much to my surprise, but it's like, wow, this thing's still around. So this is a mock customer survey from McDonnell Douglas, who make military aircraft. And it says, thank you for purchasing a McDonnell Douglas military aircraft. In order to protect your new investment, please take a few moments to fill out the warranty registration card below. Okay. Which model aircraft did you purchase? F-14 Tomcat, F-15 Eagle, F-117A Stealth, or Classified? Okay. Please indicate where this product was purchased. Received as a gift or aid package? Catalogue or showroom? Independent arms broker? Mail order? Discount store? Government surplus? That's where we get ours from. Or Classified? Please indicate how you became aware of McDonnell Douglas you have just purchased. Heard loud noise, looked up. Store display, espionage, recommended by a friend or relative or ally, political lobbying by manufacturer, was attacked by one. Okay, but really interesting is this last question. So there's lots of questions, they're quite funny, but this one I thought was particularly good. To help us better understand our customers, please indicate the interests and activities in which you and your spouse enjoy participating on a regular basis. Golf. Chris and Dina here? Yeah. Boating, sailing, sabotage, running, jogging, propaganda, misinformation, destabilization, overthrow, gardening, crafts, wines, interrogation, torture, household pets, crushing rebellions, fashion clothing, border disputes. What are you into? The interesting thing in that list is that there's not much there about, we enjoy, shooting and bombing people at our weekends or something. What they're pointing to is actually the behind-the-scenes stuff, destabilisation. This has been used by nation against nation for millennia. So that's where you get in behind the scenes in a population, and you get the population breaking into factions and setting themselves against one another. One of the missions of Satan is to destabilize the church. Yeah. How many denominations are there? Mm. And, my observation, this is just my own view here, is from what I've seen, is that not very many denominations are formed because they disagreed about a theological thing. Yeah. Most denominations form out of power and control issues, where people break free from a control that they disagreed with, a system they disagreed with. So that's the enemy at work. Now, one of the things, it's one of the reasons why I developed this teaching, is that I have seen church after church in Wellington, well, at least three churches destroyed to the point that they don't exist anymore. I was part of Eastern Suburbs Christian Fellowship for 17 years. And it was blown to pieces by a spiritual attack. And that spiritual attack was accusation. It was false accusation. It was imaginary. It was a person who believed a lie. And it didn't just split. It didn't split the church. It blew it apart. Some people never came back to a church again after that. They said, how can Christians behave like this? And people were baffled, what is going on? I've had a lot of involvement with another church that has gone through cycle after cycle of harm and division and hurt that split between 2000 and 2010, about 2008. And What sat at the heart of that was suspicion and accusation amongst people and unforgiveness, an inability to heal wounds. Interestingly, in 2008, I spent a little bit of time in Mozambique. For those of you who know about Heidi and Roland Baker's work there, I spent a little bit of time there. And before I went there, I didn't know why I was going. I've had this happen to me a couple of times where I've had that clear direction that I have to go to Africa. I hate Africa. I don't like Africa. It's dry, it's dusty, it's horrible. And God says, you need Africa. Yeah. Okay, so the thing is that I was speaking at a church, and these people, they deal with the hard stuff. You know, with witchcraft, they deal with some pretty nasty stuff around them, and they are so committed, and they are just all out for the kingdom of God. And I thought, why would I bring this message to these people? I think they know it better than I do, surely. But what came out after this message was all sorts of problems between people in that community, and the need to address them and need to deal with them. I have a slight echo of that now, because this is such a lovely bunch of people. It's kind of like, you know, what I'm seeing is really good relationships. So why do I need to speak this? Well, for two reasons. One, I'd be naive if I thought it was all perfect. Okay, there will be problems within this church. And the other thing is that in war, when one country decides to take military action against another, the very first thing they do is they take out the military targets, okay? They go for the airfields. They go for the military headquarters. In the spiritual realm, what are the military headquarters? What are the targets? Where? This is a military headquarters in the spiritual battle. Okay, so is a Christian school. You've just put a big flag up on flagpole saying, target, hit us in the spiritual realm. Which is not to say it's not, say, a good thing to do that, but you really need to watch out for this kind of attack, the attack that sets people against one another. That's the spiritual battle. Okay, so just going back, the nature of Satan. So a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, the father of lies, the accuser of our people. And so the things that the enemy will work on in us, or if you flick through to the one that says, why does the enemy succeed? The things that make us vulnerable to attack, the weaknesses in us, this is from my observation, if you like, and observation of myself, by the way, everything I'm saying is just like, oh my goodness, I've worked through this. Insecurity, pride, and a lack of love. I call out to God, please fill me with your love, because I need it. Pride is one of the most subtle and destructive of things, you know? And insecurity makes us want to defend ourselves against others, and sometimes to defend ourselves against imaginary accusations, something you thought something was going to say, someone might have said, or what they might have thought. That's a lot of what was happening in the churches in Wellington, is that people actually thought someone had an attitude, but they'd never gone and checked with them. They didn't know, they just thought that was happening. So what that leads to is suspicion, false judgment, imagined offences, harsh words, and control. I had a really odd little thing happen to me once that was just, it was just such a beautiful little illustration of this, when I wrote an email to a friend, and it was a delicate situation, but I put such careful work into this email. It was loving, it was caring, it was trying to be supportive. And I got a reply back. Thanks for your message and your email. Signed, I thought, oh, what have I done? I tried so hard to do the best thing, and what's gone wrong? And I'm trying to think what's, and I'm starting to move towards, and there's an attitude problem here. What's wrong with this person? And I called out to the Lord, and I said, what is wrong? What's happened here? And I got that answer in a flash as to what was wrong. Read it again. So I read it again with the voice of my friend that I knew. Thanks for your message and your email, signed. Oh. A judgment formed in my mind, and I don't even know why it formed. Why would it be there? Because we live in an environment where that will be fed into our minds if we're prepared to listen, if we're not prepared to check, if we're not prepared to go to the Lord and say, help me to understand this, to resolve this. But the Lord fixed it in a moment for me. But I would have carried that as a wound from this person that never existed. So, just a thought there. I have had a lot of things like that happen. Okay, so I'm going to move on to our defences are really good things. So one of the things that I've said, so it's two slides on. Yeah, that's the one. I've said that, you know, the weapons of our warfare are stunningly beautiful. Isn't that a good thing? And so if we look at this from Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 to 15. Incidentally, by the way, I've been part of a church that had this on the wall, a big plaque on the wall. And while they were pulling themselves apart and they had a moderator there to help them sort it out, the moderator was sat down with him one day and he said, if only this church would just do what's written on the wall. But yeah, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace. And be thankful. I want to go back. Bear with one another. What does bear with one another mean? It means you've got something to bear with, okay? You bear with one another when there's something that bothers you. So it recognizes that will happen. When we're called to forgive one another, it says there's going to be things we have to forgive. So this is pointing to what's going to happen. There will be offences. Just about the end here, but this from Matthew, Judging Hearts, it's the next one along. Yep, that's the one. Okay, so this is perhaps one of the biggest issues, is the judgments we make of one another, and I fight this every week, probably every day. Because the work I'm involved in, the early childhood sector in New Zealand, which is just a screaming disaster. It has fractious organisations that work against one another. It has competing interests of people who care about children and people who care about money. And sometimes things that can just make you so angry, and people do and say things that I think are really harmful and stupid. And this week, I had an email land on Tuesday morning that was all of those things. It was, what are you doing? What are you saying? From someone actually who I thought had been reasonably good, and I'm thinking, what has happened to your heart? And as the stuff rolls through my mind, I'm struggling with it, I realize I am judging this man's heart. I don't actually know what's going on. I can ask the questions. I'll be meeting with him this coming week. So I will be trying to find out what's happening. But I know that I have to go into that meeting, first of all, saying, Lord, help me to bless this man. Provide the understanding, reveal the truth, but it's not for me to judge his heart. So when it says, do not judge, or you too will be judged, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. We also have the term judgmental. Now, there's a bit of a problem here, because sometimes this is common, unfortunately, amongst Christians. I think we need to clarify this. We are called to judge things. Judging between what is good and bad, right and wrong, between good and evil, we are absolutely called to judge that. So when you judge something to be wrong, that is not judgmentalism. That's what we all have to do. We would have no justice system. Justice could not operate if you did not judge between what is right and wrong. We don't say that all of the judges in our courts are being judgmental, do we? Shouldn't do that job, it's judgmental. No, because it's judging on evidence between right and wrong. Why is it that we are told not to judge the heart? Any thoughts on that one? Yep, so it's what God sees. Yep. So really, in essence, the thing is that we can only judge on the information that we have, not on the information we don't have. And that's how our courts operate, quite strictly. So only God sees the heart. So unless you have knowledge, if a person says, I am feeling absolutely jealous towards this person, well, now you have the knowledge, and you can say, you're going to have to deal with your jealousy. You say, I can't forgive this person. You can say, truthfully, you're going to need to forgive that person. But unless you have that knowledge, you can't assume. So that's our careful thing with judging. Okay, one more, just on contrast between the things that come out of the old nature, the flesh, and the things that we will be prompted to walk in against the things of the kingdom of God. In Galatians chapter 5, it says the acts of the sinful nature are obvious. Discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy. So, and it says this is the sinful nature. The thing that Satan tries to work on and grow in us is the sinful nature, to grow these things. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So these are the things we should call out to the Lord for, to build within us. The things that are found when we stop and pray, when we ask God to change our hearts, to take us out of functioning in the flesh and go into functioning in the Spirit, then these are the things we find. And again, I want to be absolutely honest with you, I fight that battle every day. And my flesh pushes against me. I am tempted to anger and rage because I get so upset by the things I see. It's not stuff against me. It's stuff that I see going on in the world, but that doesn't matter. Rage is rage. Okay, so faith is faith, to say actually the Lord has this in hand. Okay, so last thought here. Just some things. We'll have a shorter session that I'll be doing next week, where I'm just going to touch into a few practicals, but this is just a few for a kickoff. Believe the best of one another. Don't judge hearts. If you're going to suspect somebody of something, suspect them of something good. that's a good way to look at it. Imagine the best of how they might be functioning. One of the things I haven't mentioned here is don't depersonalize. This is the road rage thing. The thing that really winds me up is people following too close. It really gets me mad. And I'm tempted to think very nasty things about the person who follows too close. And I found that it can be interesting if I imagine a person as some nice, lovely person who just drives badly. How do I feel towards them? And it kind of changes it, you know, because to take away that evil imagination of trying to personify the person as bad because they do something which is kind of stupid. Communicate. Again, in my work in the early childhood sector, not communicating is a really common form of, well, it's almost a weapon that's used, that you email organisations to try and meet and talk about something and they don't reply to your email. The silent treatment is really common. Don't do it. We can never resolve things with the silent treatment. We have to talk to each other. Forgive, forgive, forgive. And one of the things that I do a lot with my texts is I put smiley faces a lot on my texts simply to avoid the misunderstanding, because texting has no tone of voice. So I do that just to soften. It's almost like, with you, love you, even when it's just, you know, yes, I will buy the eggs or whatever, you know. It's like, I just put that in there. I think maybe a lot of us do that, but it just helps to keep that expression of care. Okay, so that's it from me. That's probably quite sufficient for today. And what we'll do is we'll touch on some practicals next week. Okay.
Awesome, Mike. Hey, quite a bit in there for a Sunday morning. A few things that really spoke to me. I mean, as we are, Jesus said, you know, the one prayer, John 17, so important that we would be one. And those discords get in the way and they stop us from being that one. But in the Psalms, we've talked about angels. And yep, the Bible, every time an angel appears in its natural form, absolutely, the first thing they say is, don't be afraid. Okay? But the Bible also says we may have entertained angels when we clothed somebody, when we fed someone. So they also have a presence that's not scary. But my thought is this. Regardless of what you're going through, maybe there is unforgiveness in your life. Maybe you are struggling with someone in this place, your place of fellowship. Maybe they've said the wrong thing. Maybe they've done something, you've seen it from afar, and you disagree with what they've done. Communicate, as Mike said, I believe is the most important thing that you can do. And it's a biblical concept. If you see someone doing something and you're unsure of what that is, for goodness sake, go and talk to them. Go, hey, and I've had people do this. Hey, I heard you say this. Can you explain that to me? Rather than going away thinking, oh my goodness, that guy with the red beard, my goodness. They came and spoke to me. I'll give you one example. There was a young man in our church. Well, I think he was younger than me. He came up to me. Now, I got tattoos on my arms, and one of them is of a comic character, and it's a lady with a snake. Now, the issue wasn't mine, but he came and spoke, and when he saw that, when I raised my hands in worship, and I stood in front of him, that's what he saw. Now, he spoke to me about an issue he has in his own personal life that he struggled with, and that picture wasn't helping him with his struggle. He came and spoke to me about it. He could have gone away, said nothing, and just held on to that and carried it. Now, if you give the enemy a foot in the door, he'll kick it open. Okay, he'll kick it open and he'll come in. If you nudge that door open for God and allow God into the situation, he'll kick it open as well. If you're struggling with someone, please go and talk to them. We don't know what's going on in everybody's life that we're seeing in here. They might be going through such a tough time, and the fact that you took the time out of your day to go and discuss with them, whatever that is, you might just help that person have some breakthrough in what they're struggling with. Communication. And when you do that, that's when you're walking with God. Because the Bible says in Psalms 91, he will order his angels. That doesn't say, hey bro, just go ahead and have a look what Mark's up to. No, he says, I want you to go. Mark's got the situation that he's going through. Now, he's not going to change my circumstance or the thing I'm going through, because I might need to learn something in it, but he will order those angels to guard and to protect me in that situation. God is your refuge and your strength. He will guard you and protect you. and anything tough that you have to go through. The sad thing today in the world is the church is not one. Do you know what? We can start right here today. Every single one of us. Well, thank you, Mike, for a great word. A great word. Because the world is watching us. At the moment you confessed to being a believer, being a follower of Jesus, being a Christian, eyes on you, looking to see where are you failing? Where are you not living up to whatever their expectation is? And it's not their expectation you have to be concerned about. It's His. Are you living up to His expectation? If you are here today and you feel like you would like some prayer to help get you to live in the expectation God has, grab someone around you. You don't have to come up to the magic space up here. It's right about here. Grab someone around you. Get them to pray for you. Just go, I just need a fresh touch from the Lord. I'm just finding it hard at the moment. Please, God, I need your help. Just refresh my heart. Align my heart a little bit more to walk so I can walk with you better. But I need your help here. Have someone pray for you. Could be here, could be out there. Beautiful folk out here that would love to pray with you. Lift